In the Game of Thrones, you either win or you die.
And we're off. Game of Thrones. Kings of the North.
Kings of the North!
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a Wednesday Is for Movies special edition podcast. Kings of the North. We're going to be talking about Game of Thrones, more specifically. We're going to be talking about the upcoming HBO show, Game of Thrones, based on the series by George R.R. Martin, which my colleague here, Alejandro, say hello, Alejandro.
Hello, Alejandro.
And myself, Dudley, will be discussing the this upcoming adaptation by the books by George R.R. Martin, which the two of us have both read and enjoyed thoroughly, so spoilers beware.
If you don't want to be spoiled, you might want to jump off at the upcoming musical break, just for those who don't want spoilers.
I think it's very important right now to let the audience know this is full of spoilers. Spoilers galore.
Yeah, we're going to shove them in there. We're going to fit them into the cracks where they don't even fit. For those of you who haven't read these series of books but are excited for the show, I think we can both highly suggest that you get out there and read these books immediately because they deserve to be read, and I think you're going to enjoy the Game of Thrones HBO series even more if you've read these books. Certainty. Reading the books is the move. Am I right?
It's absolutely right. And I would say for the people out there that haven't read them yet, it is it's like taking Lord of the Rings and giving it a shot of adrenaline and a shot of seriousness.
a shot of real world responsibility. It's hard, I think.
For adults.
Yeah, I think a lot of people make comparisons to Lord of the Rings, and that's fair. I mean, the world created by Tolkien was very innovative at the time and created such a rich fantasy world that's, you know, been copied countless times, and, you know, everybody puts their own little spin on it. But George R.R. Martin, his spin was, you know what, let's put this into the real world where things aren't so black and white and cut and dry, and he's created this fantasy world with real world implications and these, you know, wars, and he gets more into the human element of things, and the fact that HBO is making this show is perfect because there's really no other network save for maybe Showtime or AMC, but HBO definitely being at the top of their game. There's no other network that could adapt this material better than the home box office HBO. Right?
Oh, absolutely not. This will be R-rated material, and HBO or Showtime. But Showtime really does. I mean, I think Showtime is actually a subsidiary of HBO. I could be wrong.
Really?
But they don't have the.
They definitely don't put the same amount of dollars into their production that HBO has been able to.
Right.
Right. Well, anyways, this is a special edition podcast for Wednesday Is for Movies, or Wednesday Is for Comics.com. But we're going to be doing this pretty regularly as this show is coming up. So look forward to more of these Kings of the North podcasts. And for those of you who have never tuned into our Wednesday Is for Movies podcast, we do a little something special called a drink roll call to start each show. And Hondro, what you drinking tonight?
Well, John, I usually cater to the local breweries, but given this special podcast, tonight is a special night. I'm drinking mead.
Ooh, mead.
From the north.
From the north.
That
That's
which the kings of the north would be drinking.
Indeed, indeed. I love me some mead. I'm drinking mead myself. I'm drinking it from a big goblet.
Goblet of mead. Why would you drink anything else? That's what I wonder every time I drink mead.
Well, my friend, let us feast on meat and mead.
Indeed, indeed. Well, let's dig into the show a little bit. It's been fully cast. It's been filming for a couple months now, I think. There's a wonderful website, winteriscoming.net, that follows the production of this show. But I think what we're going to do is more look at this from the side of people who've read the books and kind of our thoughts and expectations of what we want this show to be, and from the character perspective, from the setting, more things from that nature. Just definitely looking at it from the perspective of people that have read the books, which, as I've said, we had. So spoilers be warned. If you don't care, just keep listening. Otherwise, might want to read those books. Let's get started, huh?
Let's get started.
Boom.
All right. I think first off, we should discuss the casting.
Indeed.
Probably one of the most important, if not the most important, aspect of the adaptation into the television series.
Absolutely.
And why don't we just read off a couple of names here? Let's see. Well, the protagonist to Game of Thrones. I mean, it's debatable, given that there's so many different points of view. I mean, every chapter in the book is a point of view.
Right. Game of Thrones, more than the books that the subsequent books in the series, the series itself actually being called The Song of Ice and Fire. Although I do like HBO's decision to just call the entire series Game of Thrones. I think that's appropriate. And that was the name of the first book. But I think the first book, more than any of them, you can definitely say has a lead protagonist, being Ned Stark. Of course, going forward, things change a little bit. We won't throw out a spoiler like that. but we will say that, you know, there are lots of different characters that get a point of view perspectives throughout the book. But Ned Stark, certainly on the onset, is the lead protagonist. I think most people that read that would at least feel that way. Because most of the characters are not exactly cast as in a very good light, whereas Ned Stark, while not being perfect, is definitely the guy who's at least trying to do the right thing. Really, really the only adult character in that first book that at least tries to be a good person.
True. So rather than use the term protagonist, let's just say he's the most important character.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way to phrase it. Ned Stark is definitely the most important character in the first book.
So, as far as starting out the series, this was probably the most important character to cast.
Absolutely.
And they went ahead and chose Sean Bean.
Indeed.
Which was a fantastic choice. I told you this, John, when I was envisioning Ned Stark, reading those books, I pictured Sean Bean. I really did.
That's amazing.
And I think it was because of his role in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that's funny, too. The comparisons between this and Lord of the Rings are kind of built in that it is, you know, so widely sold as a Lord of the Rings for adults. And the fact that this same actor that was in Lord of the Rings is only going to, let that description go further. But that doesn't distract from the fact that I think he is the perfect Ned Stark.
Drive our ships to new land, fight the whole, sing and cry.
those of you who haven't read, just to let you know that the Stark family, which the Lords of Winterfell, which is a northern kingdom in this fictional continent in which the seasons are quite long, where a winter can last for nearly a lifetime, or, you know, 10 to 12 years at least, and summer can last just as long. So you can imagine the northern kingdoms, where it's cold almost all the time, have the most brutal winters you can imagine. And so the folks that live up there are tough. And they've got a tough life. And this northern kingdom are the Starks. And Ned Stark is the lord of this area. And, you know, he's born and bred in this harsh environment. And you need an actor that can portray that kind of gruff, like, no-nonsense archetype you'd expect from somebody growing up in that environment. And I think Sean Bean is a great actor. I unfortunately haven't really seen him in much outside of Lord of the Rings, but he certainly has the look.
Oh, he definitely has the look. And as you were saying, you know, he's portraying the lord of a northern kingdom. So, you know, the closest thing we could probably get to in the real world is, I guess you could think of Vikings.
Boom.
And he's got that, Sean Bean has this presence about him. He's very noble. I don't know how, but he manages to play off that role very well, as though he's in fact royal to a certain degree. And some of the other work that he's been in, you can see that in his character, despite of whatever character he plays. He was in Equilibrium with...
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. That's awesome. That was a great movie, by the way.
Great movie. He didn't have a very large role in the movie, but he played his role quite well.
Absolutely.
And he was also in GoldenEye with Pierce Brosnan, that James Bond movie.
He was 00... Was he 006 or 008?
006.
006, yeah. He was good, you know? He's always been... And a lot of these movies, at least, has been kind of a villain. It's cool to see him get to play, you know, a relative good guy in a series.
Right, absolutely. Oh, and speaking of him playing a villain, I think his major breakthrough role was the bad guy in Patriot Games with Harrison Ford.
Oh, very.
Yeah, hello.
Oh, hello. I did not know that. A good man. Thank you. Wow, Alejandro. We usually, for those of you who haven't tuned into our Wednesdays for Movies podcast, usually to really dig deep into these obscure film facts, we have a robot named HUD, who's the distant cousin of HAL from 2001. We got an earlier model, which unfortunately does no math, but does watch just tons of movies and knows every obscure fact like this. But incidentally, and completely... unrelated, Hondro also happens to know a lot of these facts.
I do. It's a strange coincidence.
It's a very strange coincidence. Moving on.
We did decide to shut off HUD for this particular episode because a robot...
Doesn't really fit into Westeros, the continent on which the nations this Game of Thrones is played. They don't have many robots. There's a lot of shit going down, though. Let's move down the line a little bit. Speaking of other central characters, I think the next very important character, certainly in Game of Thrones, again, that we should probably touch on, is going to be Robert Baratheon. Baratheon. I guess that's how you say it. I don't know. It's interesting. We've read all this, but we haven't heard these words spoken aloud very often. It'll be interesting. I'm sure there'll be certain cases where things are pronounced much differently than we envision them in our heads.
Well, let's think about how the way the British might pronounce it. Baratheon, or Baratheon.
Those Brits. By the way, this mead is very good. I'm going to get a little bit more mead myself, but let's get in, Hondro. Who will be playing King Robert?
Well, King Robert Baratheon, whatever, will be played by Mark Addy. Yet again, another character who I think fits the role perfectly. Mark Addy is also an English actor, and you know, I'm at a loss. The one role that I remember him from is A Knight's Tale, where he plays one of the friends of the protagonist, who is Heath Ledger. What else have I seen him in?
He has been he's been around for a ton of stuff. Yeah, he's been around for a while. And I'm trying to
The Full Monty. I loved him in that movie.
I know that this guy's been in quite a bit. He's been in a whole lot. I'm actually pulling up his IMDb page right now, and I'm gonna be like, oh yeah.
All right. Well, I'll tell you right now, off the top of my head, he was in The Full Monty back in '97. I think that's probably one of the roles that we best know him for.
He was in The Flintstones and Viva Rock Vegas, which I sadly missed. The Full Monty, Son of a Beast thing. I know he was in more than this. There are a couple things I'm going down a little further down the line here. I don't know if I've really seen him in much. I've seen his pictures since the casting, and he definitely looks the part, and I've seen pictures of him in costume and on set, which we'll get to a little bit further down the line, but it's in Northern England, Scotland, and Ireland being filmed now. And he certainly looks the part, but this is a situation where jury's still out, and maybe we should get into what we would expect from the part a little bit more, since we aren't too familiar with his work.
All right, well, like I said, I did see, I don't know if you remember in A Knight's Tale, but there was one important scene in A Knight's Tale that I think really made him get this role, and there's a scene of him drinking, and he's loud and boisterous.
Oh, really?
And those are two huge parts to King.
Yeah, those are the two distinguishing characteristics of the character. This is a king who's maybe past his prime. He was a great soldier during the war, at which time he won his throne. Of course, this is the Game of Thrones. Everyone's always after more power in these stories, and he wins his power and his throne
in battle.
In battle, and he's just kind of held the throne for, I don't know, somewhere between 15, 20 years, I guess I'm led to believe. And he's just kind of enjoyed it and started drinking and eating and kind of slipping. Actually, definitely slipping. And there are other people that are out there eager to usurp this power. And he's at least aware enough to know that he is in trouble, that others are out there, but he's so used to his power that he is completely and utterly unable to really admit that he needs to change in any way.
He knows that he needs to change. He just can't.
That's a much better phrase.
He can't, he gets Ned. All right, I don't want to give too much away, but, I mean, this is the beginning of the story, is he comes to Ned because he needs a new tower,
the hand of hand.
Hand of the
new
king.
Hand, yeah.
And, he needs somebody that he can trust, like Ned, to basically rule the kingdom for him because he has no desire to anymore. He spends his entire reign basically hunting. And getting drunk.
Right. Yeah. He misses the battle, and so he just goes out there and orchestrates these crazy hunts and these I forget what they're called, the games.
Oh, the
They're like the contests where all the knights battle. I mean, the name is not really as significant. It's just the fact that he misses the glory while he's orchestrating all this.
Tourneys.
Right. That is what they call them. But while he orchestrates these hunts and these tourneys, he isn't really administering things very well. And meanwhile, there are people very eager to take the reins themselves. And there's just there's plots against plots, and there's all these things going on, and everyone has their own agenda. And that's the Game of Thrones. Everybody is out there with their own agenda. Everyone thinks they deserve to have all the power, and it's much more like real life in that respect. It's not black versus white. It's
all shades of gray.
It's all shades of gray.
And John, one very important thing I must remind you is, in the Game of Thrones, you either win or you die.
Kablam! That's a tagline. You'll be seeing that in previews before too long.
Absolutely. You heard it here first.
Absolutely.
And you can quote me.
Shall we move on?
Let's move on. Wait, I'm gonna go ahead and get me some more mead. Cause I don't know what happened to my serving wench. Wench! Where's my mead?
She's off. She'll be back shortly. Let's move down the list. Here's another one that, it's funny, as we're reading this, I realize I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce all these names. I have it set in my head, and since we haven't seen the show yet, haven't actually met any of these characters. We don't really know exactly how they're pronounced, but this is a very important character. Perhaps you could argue, as the books continue, that she becomes more and more of a central character. And of course, I'm talking about Daenerys Targaryen. How in the world do you say that? Targaryen. Wow, the dragon. The dragon family. Daenerys is a exiled princess, daughter of the previous king of Westeros, king of the Iron Throne, and she from the onset, you know that she plays a very important role, but as the series continues and she gets older, you realize more and more that she's going to be a very important character, and I don't want to give too many spoilers here, but the casting of this role is up there in importance, and perhaps maybe tied with Cersei and Caitlyn, the most important female leads of this series. Some roles...
Actually, I think she's got them beat.
Yeah, I know, I think you're right.
And if not so in the first two or three books, I'm sure... As Martin finishes his saga.
Yeah, no, long term, the assuming this show does well, the actress playing Daenerys is perhaps the most pivotal female role in the show. I think that argument can be made quite easily. And she's going to be played by Emilia Clarke, which is relatively unknown. So going to be very interesting to see how she does, although I've seen photographs on set.
She looks gorgeous.
Yeah, she looks absolutely gorgeous, which is an important part of the role. Of course, in the books, she's quite young. I think on the onset of the books, she's probably only 15 or 16. This actress, on the other hand, is significantly older. I think she's definitely already 18. Because
oh my God, she's an old woman.
Yeah, she's gotta be. I mean, some of the things, that they couldn't film some of the crazy situations this person gets into in the books. Of course, in this fantasy world, people grow up a little bit faster than in the real world.
Just a little bit.
Just a
now,
little bit.
Here's an interesting thing. Given that in Westeros, the seasons can last, several years, I wonder if a year... I mean, Martin never really discusses in the books, but it could be that a year is more than 365 days. So a person,
that's possible, yeah. They really leave that pretty ambiguous.
True. So, let's just pretend, she's like 18.
Yeah, I think that's probably the way to go about it.
She's legal. She's legal. Let's just say
that's what we mean to say.
But no, she looks like she's got the part. She's got the part down from looks. But we've yet to see in any of the promos or ads, which admittedly have been very short because they've come out even as production has still been going. And I think that first promo they ran on HBO came out literally like within 3 or 4 weeks after filming began. So they really haven't put together any scenes at a level where, I mean, they haven't even had any speaking lines shown yet.
Well, they haven't had any speaking lines shown yet, but upon a little bit of research, it looks like they filmed 2 episodes.
Hmm.
That's what they're up to.
Wow. Well, they're going. I mean, it's been several months now.
Indeed.
Mer. Yeah, it's definitely looking to be shaping up very well. I'd like to see more, but I very much want to see HBO film and edit these series together well before they really try to market it, and I think that's what they're doing. Everything right. They've released so far is absolutely just a teaser. There has not been a trailer with any significant footage shown yet, which makes this still a very unproven property. But for those of us who've read the book and have at least seen the photographs, it looks as though they're doing things right.
Absolutely. I mean, once you have a good story and a good script, that's 50% of your work right there. I mean, the writing to a successful production, whether it be a movie or a series, is half the work right there. And, you know, having sampled the writing ourselves and seeing how involved George R.R. Martin is making the show, at least the writing portion we feel pretty confident about.
Right, right. And George R.R. Martin has a long history in television, actually. He's written for several shows. He wrote and I think executive produced, or certainly at least produced, the show Beauty and the Beast, which was a live-action show in, I believe, the late 80s.
Oh, with Linda Hamilton.
Yeah, exactly. He was highly involved. He was... I should probably look into this a little bit more before I go nuts, but he was heavily involved in the writing of that show, I can say, without even looking into it. And I wish we had Hud, because he does such a great job on these, you know, random fun fact elements.
I would reactivate him, but again, this is a special...
Oh, no. I really would much rather you didn't. He's a pain in the bitch. Indeed. Yeah, but I do see here he was a producer for Beauty and the Beast, which was the show with Linda Hamilton. And let's see, what else? And that was in 1987. You know what? I vaguely recall that show. I think I was probably a little too young, but...
We were little whippersnappers back then.
We were little whippersnappers. But I
distinctly remember Linda Hamilton in it, and she had the 80s style hair, you know, all puffed up. Honestly, it seemed like a good show. I don't know how long it went on for.
Well, you know, I think it was the kind of show that was maybe trying to be something that in 1987 when it aired, there wasn't the push in TV create something that ambitious effectively. I don't know, but I don't want to get derailed by Beauty and the Beast. Suffice it to say that he was a writer for the show, and he was, in fact, I'm seeing now, a producer of that show. So he knows how to write for a serialized drama, at the very least. And he certainly knows how to write the hell out of an awesome book, no doubt.
No diggity doubt.
Blippity floppity bloop. Back to the casting here. Let's get back to talking about casting from the perspective of the book and what we hope, judging by the characters in the book, what, you know, the kind of actors they would need in those roles. Another very important actress that we haven't touched on yet is Arya Stark, who we determined to be the lead protagonist's youngest daughter.
And she is being played by Macy, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, Macy Williams, another mostly unknown actress, but we can definitely discuss what will be important for the actress to bring onto the role.
Well, you know, in this specific case, there actually has been a video released of the actress learning how to fence. Or rather, after she's already learned how to fence to a great degree, a video of her practicing. And for this specific actress, she's kind of the tomboy, whereas her daughter Sansa is the...
Sister.
Her sister Sansa, who's a few years older, is the kind of prissy princess, although not technically a princess, that... daughter of a lord who is always trying to woo over the actual prince and is much more interested in those pursuits. Arya is kind of the daughter who really shows her northern heritage, which, you know, are the kind of the more Viking culture in this fantasy world, and wants to be a warrior and wants to fight and is always trying to be outdoors and consequently takes lessons in fencing and becomes... pretty good little fighter, as far as like a 13-year-old girl can be, and there's a video of the actress fencing, and she's really good. Of course, there's no real acting involved, but she looks the part, and she definitely has taken the commitment to the role to actually learn to do the things that are going to be expected of her as an actress, and it's good to see from a production standpoint as well that the producers of this show are actually taking the time to make sure their actors and actresses are learning to do things themselves, so they, you know, they won't need a stunt double to do something as simple as ride a horse.
Right.
I know all the actors and actresses who haven't already have all taken riding lessons and things like that, which in this the world of Game of Thrones is going to be really important because that is the mode of transportation.
Unless, of course, they're from the Iron Islands, in which case they'd have to pretend not to ride well,
I know what you mean. Just a little Game of Thrones humor there.
Oh, if you didn't get it, we need to read those books.
Zing. That's true. That's absolutely true. And anyways, Arya, I think the casting looks good, but this is just another one of those cases where... it's an unknown. A lot of unknown actors and actresses in the show, and we're not really going to know for sure until we see them in motion. All we do know is that the casting of the show, is as far as casting actors and actresses that look the part, based on the descriptions in the book, they've been quite spot on.
Oh, it's dead on. I mean, one thing I need to add to Arya's character is that, you know, not only is she a tomboy... she's made out to be a tomboy in the book. She also kind of looks, a lot less pretty than Sansa does. She's kind of boyish looking, you know, up to a point where, you know, spoiler, she could be made to look like a boy.
Indeed.
I'm not going to give away why or where, but, you know, the character is supposed to be a girl, but... you know, boyish enough to even be able to look like a boy and be confused
right,
for one.
Right.
And after
at like 12 or 13, and that's an interesting aspect from casting. You know, that's kind of a weird thing. I always feel that casting directors have a tough job when, you know, trying to cast like a 12-year-old girl. Like, wow, you look like a boy. You know, that's tricky, but. I think they've done a good job. You know, it's not ugly. It's you know, it's just a 12-year-old girl that can fit that role.
Oh, right. Don't get me wrong. I mean, and I hope that if that actress is listening to our podcast right now, which, let's be honest, it's very likely. this is not to be meant to be an insult. It's merely meant to say, like, it has to be an actress that could get away with being a little bit more unisex, not
right.
too prissy, being able to act like a tomboy and kind of look the part as well.
Right, right. Which is going to be tricky because, you know, these young actors and actresses that are playing, for the most part, the sons and daughters of the central characters, which, an interesting aspect of this show that you completely don't get from something like Lord of the Rings, is that this show, in the book series itself, centers around characters that are a little bit older, you know, late 30s, early 40s, that all have children, and their children consequently play very important roles, particularly in that they show the repercussions of war, because, you know, nothing more, you know, nothing hammers home the negative repercussions of war quite like what happens to the children, you know, the people who are really not at fault in any of this, but get suckered into all this just the same.
Right, in a sense, you know, at no fault whatsoever, it's still young, barely in the beginning life.
And still being shaped, and these kids become shaped by war, which is another important concept, particularly as we move into our next actor or character, Jon Snow.
The bastard.
The bastard. The bastard of the North. Jon Snow is another hugely important character, and you could even say that, I mean, we've spoken about how actors, characters like Ned Stark are definitely most important in the first season, and Daenerys might be the most important female character. Jon Snow, from the long-term perspective of the show, as these characters age and the story develops, Jon Snow could potentially be the most important casting of the entire series.
True. And yet another example of them having to cast a young character. You know, like you said, the character may only be 16 in the books, but is being played by an 18-year-old or something of the sort.
Yeah, they're typically skewing a little older for the series, which makes sense, because you don't know when these very young actors and actresses, you don't know how they're going to age, and you don't want to have to cast someone new. You want to avoid that, so it makes sense that they're going a little older with their actors. Definitely not too upsetting, and
right.
It's not too dramatic. I mean, it's a few years older.
Well, Jon Snow is being played by Kit Harington.
Right.
And yeah, I believe he's about 18 years old.
Right, right.
And but still, even at 18, that's a pretty big responsibility. Although you do see somebody like Daniel Radcliffe, the boy they cast for
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter, thank you. And he turned out perfectly.
He did. They got lucky though. I mean, that wasn't a guarantee. That's a situation where, you know, whoever's involved in casting has to have a very keen eye. In this case, you know, it's somebody who's already about 18, you know, obviously already gone through puberty. You can already get a pretty good feel for what they're going to look like. Jon Snow, if this show is a success, which I have every reason to believe it will be, this show will be around for, you know, at least 5 or 6 more seasons.
Five or six more years.
Yeah, which means these kid actors they're hiring, particularly those like the character being of Jon Snow, you know, where they're getting, you know, a lot of actors that are about 17, 18, they'll be in their mid-20s at the end of this. And, you know, as you know, they could change quite a bit. That's, you know, that's tough for someone in casting. That's much more difficult than casting, you know, older characters that are pretty established in their acting ability and their looks.
Right. And then imagine the after effects of some of this. Like, in 20 years, we might be hearing about, like, some of these actors, like, their lives being ruined because they, of all the fame and glory they had making the biggest show in human history.
Yeah. Well, this show, obviously, it's not going to be for everyone because there is kind of a fantastic element to it. But I think a lot of people that maybe would have avoided the books because it's in the sci-fi fantasy section in the library or the bookstore are going to get behind the show, and a lot of people are going to, as you watch, forget that there's even fantastical elements in the show, because it's subtle. And it's so secondary behind the actual character elements of the series, which is why we're focusing so much on casting, because the acting ability of these characters is going to be make or break.
You know what kills me? You talk about, and you're right. Especially, there'll be much less fantastical and kind of fantasy stuff in the first season, which would be the first book, because that element doesn't really come into play until really the end. I mean, it's there, but it doesn't become a major role until the end of the first book.
Right.
And we could totally give away, because you and I both know what the ending is going to be.
Oh, yeah.
But when that moment comes, it's going to be a complete 180 for the show.
Yeah.
And I wonder how
that they do prime you for it a little bit. Some creatures of fantasy that exist in this series that, if you'll recall, going back to Arya, there's a scene where she is escaping from a situation, and she finds the skeletons of, you know what I'm saying, and those who have read this probably recall, if you remember the first book, Game of Thrones, well.
I don't think I remember the skeletons.
Really?
Oh, those skeletons.
Yeah,
yes.
exactly.
Oh, yeah. That is a huge...
Yeah, it proves to you that not only do people speak of these fantastical elements, but that they, in fact, did exist, or potentially do exist.
Right. That kind of reminds me of a metaphor. Well, it's not really a metaphor. It's a fact. If you drop a frog into boiling water, it'll jump up and escape from the pot. But if you put a frog in cool water and boil it slowly, the frog will stay there and boil to death. I guess what I'm really trying to say is that...
Frogs are delicious.
Frogs are delicious. No, what I'm trying to say is that George R. R. Martin kind of eases you into the whole fantastical...
Indeed, yeah.
...point of view. So that somebody that may be thrown off by, or may not particularly like stuff that is fantasy and magic,
right.
Will not be immediately turned off. It may actually be eased into it.
Right. No, I think that's exactly what will happen. I mean, if you give someone the first book, Game of Thrones, somebody who hates the fantasy genre even, they might start reading it and be like, oh, this isn't really fantasy at all. And then, you know, the book slowly kind of adds a little fantastical elements into the book, but by then you're so into the characters that all of a sudden, you know, towards the end of that book, and certainly in the later books, I mean, there's all sorts of fantastical elements going on, but you're so wrapped up in the story. Yeah, exactly. You're a boiling frog by that point.
Oh, those boiling frogs.
Delicious. Delicious. Well, okay, Robb Stark, that's an important role. But Robb Stark, I would say, is not, if it follows the books, is not going to have that much screen time. But the screen time he does have, the actor's going to have a powerful presence. The actor looks the part, but let's...
The reason I'm not worried about Robb Stark is because he's not a complicated character.
Exactly, yeah. They need a character with a look. It's certainly acting chops, but a character with a regal look, and a character who looks not just regal, but like a guy who could truly tear some shit up, so to speak. A warrior.
A young Viking.
But let's move on to a character who is extremely important, and from a casting perspective, your options are quite limited. We're of course talking about Tyrion Lannister.
Would you say that your options are quite small?
Yeah. Cut in half. No.
Damn, we're good.
No, Tyrion Lannister, which in the novels is I'm trying to make sure I say the politically correct term, but
little person.
He's a little person. A dwarf, what used to be called a midget. He is, and this is an actor, you can't change this in the books because this is such an important part of his character. He comes from a very proud family, and particularly a family of the south in Westeros, which is a much warmer, more temperate climate. If you compare it to Europe, which I think you can't help but make comparisons to Western Europe. The northern families would be the Scandinavian and British Isles, whereas the southern families would be the French, Spanish, Italians, much more interested in aesthetics and beauty traditionally, and you know here you have a little person with dwarfism. Is that a word?
I do believe it is.
Okay, dwarfism. He has a genetic disorder where he is a very small person in this society that is very aesthetically oriented. So he's somewhat of an outcast, but his family is way too proud to deny him of his rightful position. But he's always seen as a kind of embarrassment to his family, and his family doesn't really do a very good job of ignoring that, and consequently he feels it. And instead of being overtly Machiavellian with his power, he is extremely intelligent as a character, and has learned that he's never going to have the overt power that his other siblings and certainly his father, who is another important character, is going to have. But the Lannisters are kind of the bad guys in this story, and Tyrion is a counter to the rest of his family because he's not really playing the Game of Thrones like the rest of them. He's so smart that he's kind of above it. He realizes that it's nonsense, but he's very interested in his own survival and very interested in trying to keep at least some sanity amongst this crazy, these crazy feuds between families. He's probably the character that's most on top of the game and most realizes that this Game of Thrones is being played and that it doesn't really matter who wins. I think he's very aware that it's absolutely nonsensical, but that doesn't distract from the fact that it's unavoidable for these human machinations to exist.
I'm very curious as to how they're going to show... I mean, because when you read the books, most of his thought process is obviously all internal monologue.
Right.
It's a... And you'd see
the thing. That's why the acting in this role is so huge. And that's one of the problems you get in adapting any sort of written work, where internal monologue is such an important part. And you don't want to... I mean, you don't want to have voiceovers over the entire show.
It just makes it look cheap.
Yeah, the contradiction between what people are saying and what they're thinking is so important in this material. Because nobody is saying what they're thinking. Everybody is trying to, you know, get above, you know, their whoever their opponents may be, and they're also trying to be Machiavellian in their encounters with their allies even. And that's gonna be hard. And that's why I think acting in this,
I think they may have to substitute some of the internal monologues with some made up dialogue with either made up characters that weren't in the books, or characters that were in the books are going to play a bit of a bigger role than they were originally intended to.
Right.
To purpose of communicating the actor's thoughts.
Right. Well, in Tyrion's case, that character would be Shay, obviously, who is his...
confidant.
His confidant prostitute.
Yes.
And, I mean, these characters that we were talking about, Shades of Grey... even the characters you most root for have their vices. In Tyrion's case, it's his prostitute Shay, who is an actress that'll be pretty important as well, in that she has to be very attractive.
It's hardly a vice, prostitution, as weird as that may sound. I guess this is one of the shades of gray that we were talking about, because in his condition, he can't really get women the regular way. I mean, this is not a PC world like we are in today that,
right,
you know, you could say that there's some chance. I mean, he's seen as sort of a monster.
Right.
In this time. So the only way...
Well, it adds complexity to the character. He absolutely missed out on being loved as a child. I mean, his parents were embarrassed of him. And consequently, and you get this as he's older, he could never believe that a woman could love him. And it's funny that he's this, you know, this incredibly powerful person, both literally and mentally. He plays the Game of Thrones better than anybody, and he uses people against one another, and he understands everything that's going on. And you can see him, you know, just being absolutely brilliant. And then at the end of the day, he comes home to this woman, and he's so fragile. And when you get into his inner monologue, which he's going to have to, you know, in the show, just convey, just, you know, as an actor, but he doesn't believe that this woman loves him, even though he so desperately wants her to. And an interesting that the book itself doesn't really let you know, but you're led to believe that maybe she does. But I think in the show in particular, I think the scenes between Tyrion and this woman are going to be where he kind of lets loose some of his inner monologue. At least that's what I would expect, because that would make sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I would have to agree.
Yeah, because Tyrion's inner monologue is going to be an important part of the show, because he works with the villains, kind of, but isn't necessarily one of them. So his perspective is an important characteristic of that relationship.
Indeed.
In didgeridoo. Let's get past the cast a little. We've touched on a lot of the important members of the cast, and let's get into the location, and particularly the filming locations of the show, and how they relate or how they align themselves with what we envisioned in our heads as we read the book. Books, rather.
The books. Well, to start off, obviously, they needed a place for Winterfell, which is where the Stark family governs, would you really use the word govern?
They govern. I mean, they're the, I think the way it's set up, as it used to be Westeros used to be seven kingdoms and is now ruled by one.
But I think I would have used the word ruled as opposed to governed.
Yeah.
You know, like, government has some...
I mean, it's very, you know, very hierarchical, I mean, very top-down. The king, you know, has all the power, and it's not like what we have here in the States. Obviously, it's very much the rule of the king, but I think they're seen, I think the lords of, like, the Lord of Winterfell in particular, as seen as a leader. I mean, it seems like, obviously, if you know what happens later on in the books, there's still clear allegiances between different areas of this continent to where they have very real power, whether it's, you know, as a king or a lord. Like, they definitely have the power to make important decisions.
Huge decisions.
Yeah.
Like what's going to be on the dollar menu at the local fast food store.
Dude, yeah, you really can't overstate how important that is. I mean, that affects the local farmers of whatever, you know, whatever crops or animals are being used.
We are not serving food today. It's all mead.
Mead, exactly.
Mead.
Dude, by the way, I'm loving this mead.
I'm loving this mead.
I don't even know what mead is, really.
Heck, I almost wanted to take a break so I can bring myself.
No, but locations. This show is being filmed in, it's basically the British Isles. It's also, there's some films being filmed in the, where are the Dothraki film scenes being filmed?
Dothraki / the Three Cities were originally going to be filmed in Morocco, but now they've been switched to Malta.
Hmm. Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Now, there's two... You know, things I want to point out. Okay, fine. Ireland works perfectly for, I think, Winterfell and maybe even King's Landing. I feel like they need to go a little bit further south for King's Landing.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the British Isles also work very well for the Iron Islands as well.
True.
Yeah. So
what
I think.
About River Run.
Yeah, River Run. I picture River Run much more. Mainland Western Europe. I picture it as very, you know, very built into the geography, very, like, somewhat tropical, like, slightly tropical, you know?
Oh, no, I could not see this tropical. I'd say it's more like meadows and...
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sorry. I was thinking King's Landing.
Oh, no, King's Landing is definitely... Yes, more.
Yeah, King's Landing is like, you know,
something.
Yeah, King's Landing is like the, you know, the most beautiful, you know, like cities like Florence and Venice, you know.
Right.
Whereas, yeah, River Run would be, maybe, that's tough. Maybe somewhere in between, like something like near the Alps in Germany or something.
Because Caitlin always talks about how much, how River Run was so much warmer than Winterfell.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's gonna be interesting because I have a certain picture in my head and I don't know... First off, I don't know how clear my picture of what it should be. How George R. R. Martin...
Right. Well, really, you know, that's the thing, though. The British Isles... There's a great deal of, I mean, there's really a little bit of everything in the British Isles. And certainly, I certainly think it's as good as, you know, good a place as any to film this. They're able to use a lot of the natural setting, which, you know, the natural beauty of the areas is going to be an important factor here. And I think they're using some real castles and, you know, things like that. But also there's a lot, you know, that's going to be in sets, and I think the production designers, the production designers they have here are all top notch. There's a lot of Emmy and Academy Award winning designers that are on this project as well that know how to make the most out of what they're dealing with. So,
but regardless of how much you plan, and I'm sure the settings are going to be gorgeous and exact replicas of what George R. R. Martin envisioned in terms of castles and whatnot, But weather, I think, going to be a big issue because they're supposed to still be in summer.
Right.
And if they only started filming, you know, 2 or 3 months ago, yes, they were able to capture moments of summer. But now that it's going to get much colder, how are they going to play that off?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think they're going to have the whole first season finished filming in about a month. So that shouldn't be too much of an issue. But, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's something they worry about quite a bit in the production. But certainly in the northern scenes, which, as you know, at least the first few episodes are going to be largely centered in the northern areas, it's going to, you know, they're going to look for the equivalent of fall, which, you know, as filming has been in the past month in the British Isles, I'm sure it's been very well suited for what they've been doing. But as they move south, I don't know. That's a great question. And in the King's Landing and River Run, I wonder what kind of changes in set they're going to have, and I don't know.
Well, I guess we will find out.
We will.
Once we will.
That'll be something
we play the Game of Thrones.
In our next podcast, we'll do some research into those areas and where they're filming each of the different kingdoms each of the different segments of Westeros, and we'll dig into detail a little bit more as to how they relate to the different major cities in Westeros.
We'll do.
Indeed.
I look forward to it.
Yeah, we'll also take a much bigger look and much more analytical look at the production stills that they've released. I know there's one of Bronn recently. We won't get too much into that right here, but we'll get into the production stills a little bit more and actually get into the previews they have released. Because there's things there. There are some very interesting things in the previews they have released. Some very telling things, which I would advise anybody listening to this to go check out. And we'll put them up on the website as well.
I think that'll give our listeners something to look forward to.
Yeah, I love those guys and girls.
We love you guys. Anyways.
All right. Well, you have some good mead. You enjoyed your mead tonight, Elmer?
My mead was delicious. All I needed is some meat to wash it down. A serving wedge.
Nothing puts me to bed quite like a big piece of... Actually, that was about to sound pretty gross. I'm going to not say that.
Go ahead. Just say it, John.
No, I'm not. I'm going to say mead. Let's take a sip of mead and call it a night, shall we?
Let's.
All right. Kings of the North, buddy.
Kings of the North!
Kings of the North. All right, always a pleasure, dude.
Always a pleasure.
We're